Interest rates are coming down and the government has provided a massive tax cut of rupees 1 lakh crore. By first looks, that should be enough to boost consumption. You look carefully enough and the problems start to emerge. Welcome to Beyond Averages, our weekly data show where we try to decode the story behind the big numbers. India's consumption growth has been higher post-pandemic than it was during the pre-pandemic period. Experts indicate that the government's budget bonanza coupled with RBI's rate cuts and a good monsoon are set to deliver another good consumption year, with strength of the domestic economy helping India tide over the global uncertainty crisis. However, other uncertainties are looming large, especially with AI taking away jobs and a rejig of the global order affecting trade. So will India's consumption be able to keep pace with the economy beyond FY26? We have with us Debupam Chaudhary, Chief Economist, Piramal Enterprises Limited, and Dheeraj Nim, Economist at ANZ, to decode India's consumption story. Thanks for coming on the show. But before I turn to you, let me make our viewers to some of the numbers that we have. How has consumption held up until now? Let me take you to those numbers for a moment. If you look at it, India's consumption over the last 4 years has been around 8.1%. Compared it to the pre-pandemic period, and India's consumption has been 6.7%. So there's a jump up in consumption growth, at least in the last 4 years. FY24, the consumption dipped, but then it went back again to 7.6%. Now let's move on to the next story. Even though consumption growth has picked up, there's kind of return to normal as well. If you look at this number, 56.7% of the GDP PFCE had. The share of PFCE or private final consumption expenditure was 58.1% in FY23 and 58.1% in FY22. Now look, from FY20 to FY12, and the share was somewhere close to 56.3%. So, the share has come down from 58.1, but it's still higher than that period. Now, let me go to our experts. Debupam sir, first to you. How has consumption held up until now? GST was an all-time high in April. Do we say it's petering out? Or is it returning back to normal or not?
Indian economy is a consumer-dominated economy, as you rightly showed in your graph. Close to 60% of the GDP comes from what you and I spend on Indian goods and services on an annual basis. So obviously, consumption is one of the most important items to track in order to understand the health of the economy. And by and large, the share of consumption of within GDP has not shifted much, barring the 2 years during COVID, which was because of the K-shaped recovery, with the high income or the affluent section spending more than the non-affluent sections. That caused a little bit of a sharp rise from 56 to 58, but more or less it has been in the 56 to 56.5% bracket, which is a good sign. However, there has to be measures taken to increase this share now to somewhere around 60%, which needs a very concerted effort from both policymakers as well as consumers. The way of thinking of consumers, etc., needs a platonic shift in order to reach that 60% target, in order to attain India's next growth trajectory of 8% plus on a sustained basis for the next 5 to 10 years. So, prima facie, things have remained where they have been for the last 15, 20 years, but now that is the time to create that next major shift.
Dheeraj, coming to you, GST was at an all-time high in April. So, do we see a continuation of the consumption story from FY25, or are we expecting a dip? There was a government tax bonanza, of course.
Right. I mean, if you think of drivers of consumption in the Indian economy, or actually any emerging market economy for that matter, you would list items like income growth, prices, access to credit or the cost of credit, and of course, the broader story about household balance sheets, you know, how much leverage they are, etc. Now, if you think of how these drivers have evolved over the last 1 year and are expected to evolve this year, income growth is, of course, expected to slow. I mean, we've already seen GDP slowdown happen. And even though we expect a bit of recovery, India's growth is, of course, not going back to trend growth or above it. So there's going to be a bit of a negative output gap as far as economic growth is concerned vis-a-vis trend. And I think that income growth will follow suit. So income growth is not looking like a great driver in FY26. The second bit, and importantly about prices, you know, we've been facing a lot of inflation headwinds in 2024, especially for items like food. And I think that that weighed heavily on rural consumption in conjunction to the fact that bad weather had also contributed to lower real income growth in rural areas because of its impact on food production. So I think that part of the story is looking quite bright this year. And we've already been expecting a sustained rural recovery to happen for a few quarters, if not the whole year. And that could also benefit from a weak base. So, you know, consumption growth numbers could look high or look like driving GDP growth, at least for a few quarters, on the back of sustained rural recovery, which should also be supported by lower domestic consumer price inflation this year. So that's a good one. The third one is about credit. And like, you know, we've seen in the credit growth numbers, the credit cycle has, of course, peaked. And if it's true for even the personal credit, which, of course, would have been weighed down by the RBI's macroprudential regulations, you know, around containing credit growth in the personal unsecured segment. So I think credit is not looking that great a contributor to consumers' demand this year. Income is not, but prices would certainly be. But I think the bigger factor that is constraining this environment or the optimism around consumption growth is how leveraged the balance sheets of households are. We have to realize that the personal loan boom that we saw in the last couple of years was one of the strongest in the history of India's consumer loan growth. And I think that that's a trend to reckon with. With income growth not looking great, I think households would be forced to retire a part of their debt. And that would obviously put a lid on how fast, you know, consumption growth can be in this particular upcycle. So to come back to your question, Ishan, you know, can growth story be sustained as it was in the last few years? I don't think so. While we may still see high consumption growth numbers on the back of rural base effect and rural recovery for a few quarters, but if you average it out across a year or 2 years or 3 years, depending on where, how long do you think the, you know, business cycle is, I think that number is obviously converging towards what you would expect from the headline GDP growth and not significantly beat it.
We were just discussing, taking off from Dheeraj's point, Devapam, we were just discussing the impact of credit growth and how that's petering out. And you were making some interesting points. Can you just tell our viewers as to what we make of this slowdown in credit growth at least?
So a growing economy like India, who wants to become a developed nation by 2047 or the third largest nation by, say, 2030, credit growth needs to be much higher than where we are today. So in between for a few months or maybe a few quarters, last year, a couple of years back, we did see that bank credit growth in the range of 16 to 18%. But obviously that was the point when there was this rising gap between savings growth and credit growth, which forced the banks to bring down their credit growth because of lack of growth capital. Now, these are challenges that needs to be addressed because an economy like India would need credit growth to rise in the range of anywhere between, you know, 15 to 18% on a sustained basis for the next 10 years to achieve the targets that we have put in place for us. We all know for a long period of time, India has been a capital deficit and labor surplus country. And we have certainly worked significantly towards it. I'll give you an example. So, for example, when in 2005, someone from the middle class background, joining the workforce for the first time was planning to buy a house, the interest rate would typically range between anywhere between 10 to 11%. That same demography now today, when they go out to buy a house, the same interest rates on a sustainable basis have come down to 7.5 to 8%, given the current boost for RBI also. So this, the systemic decline in interest rates have happened because of various steps which has been taken in order to attract more and more capital into the country. But obviously this is not enough. The banking sector, in fact, got crowded out, or there was a significant amount of heating which was generated when the banking credit was growing at 16 to 18%. So we need alternative measures of funding, alternative measures of capital sources to ensure that this significant growth rate of 15 to 80% on a sustained basis is maintained for the next 10 years. So that's the point I'm trying to make. Banks by themselves, the way Indian banks are today, or the number of banks that we have, or the size of the banking sector that we have today, is not maybe equipped well enough to address the growth required to meet the capital requirements of the country, both for retail consumers as well as corporate clients.
I'll get to the point where we talk about what can actually spur consumption, but it's an interesting topic you've touched, at least on the housing part, because if you look at the credit growth, besides credit growth, there's another aspect that has come in, which is the asset bubble or the affordability aspect in the housing, which takes me to an interesting aspect in terms of graph, at least. Let me show you one more data point, which you would find interesting here. If you look at the how income growth has happened over the last few years, there will be something interesting. So this is from last year, FY24 data, which is released by the MOSPI very recently, right? And if you look at it, for the private for overall economy, in manufacturing, the compensation of employees grew by 11.6%. For private corporations, it was 13.8%. And look at what has happened to the household sector. It's shrunk. Compensation of employees has shrunk here. We have been talking about a K-shaped consumption. Dheeraj, question comes to you. How much of this is playing out in the economy, and how much of an hindrance would it have for us to grow consumption?
Well, there's no doubt, you know, having a large K-shaped recovery fuels a lot of fundamental issues as far as economic trajectory is concerned, and consumption's trajectory in particular. I mean, let me give you a bit of a backdrop. You know, we don't have very updated data on consumption divided by rural and urban areas. But, you know, if you go by certain estimates, then rural areas, for example, would be contributing about 50% of the value of private consumption in the economy. While, of course, there are a much larger consumer base. So by K-shaped recovery, we would mean that the per capita consumption growth in this particular segment of the rural economy and urban poor is actually much weaker than it is for the higher income echelons in the economy. And that is obviously reflecting in various indicators, like you said, as far as housing is concerned, you know, house prices for really, you know, upper end segments, or, you know, the large houses or luxury premium houses, the prices have gone up through the roof. They continue to grow at a substantial pace, but prices for smaller houses have started decelerating as far as at least the growth rates are concerned, you know. So all of those effects are playing out. Look, I think it goes back to the fundamental question of how equitably your economic gains or your output is distributed. It matters for the long-term growth potential of the economy. If you have a large consumer base which is not experiencing income growth, which is not only, let's say, equal at par with the rest, but substantially below that, I think it contributes to a lot of socioeconomic problems. Of course, they are also a vote bank, you know, and we have seen this kind of economic trends play out politically in the world over our economic history. But at the same time, we also have to realize that we cannot constrain, you know, half of India's consumption and expect India's consumption growth to be a growth driver, or India's consumption to GDP share to rise. So I think that that's going to be a bit of a challenge. It also will have implications for financial markets in the way people save and invest money. And I think this is a mega trend to reckon with. And I hope, you know, this K-shaped recovery, at least in FY26, is less of a concern than it was in FY25. Like I sort of implied earlier, we expect rural recovery. We expect some recovery to happen at the lower income groups. And I think that should alleviate some of this concern. But of course, post-pandemic, wider income and wealth inequalities are a concern world over, just not in India. And I think the steps need to be taken to address it in the medium term, if not immediately.
Nibubam, over to you with the same question. The K-shaped recovery, is it expected to consumption actually? Is it expected to continue, or are we going to see some semblance between not just rural and urban, but between different classes within the urban India?
We take a lot of solace in the fact that India is growing at, by the way, I don't think Indian growth rate is going to fall below 6.5% in FY26, despite the global headwinds, etc. But then again, this is nothing to be, you know, exuberant about. This is obviously the highest growth rate that will be managed by a major economy in the world. 6.5% without any impact from global uncertainties. These are obviously feathers in the cap of India's economic management. But in order to address the K-shaped recovery, which is very much in play, you know, and obviously the economic survey has also alluded upon it, we need the economy to grow anywhere between 7.5% to 8% on a sustained basis for the next 10 years. And this is the only way we can come out of the setbacks that were generated after COVID hit us, after the lockdowns were put into place, and we have not yet come out of those setbacks. As far as my calculation goes, at least the Indian economy is lacking anywhere between 80 lakh crores to 90 lakh crores, which needs to be generated back. And the more delays there are on a year basis to generate this back, this keeps on piling up. So this is going to be cumulatively a very large number for every year that we miss out on a 7.5 or 8% growth rate. And hence the delay would also creep in order to address a more equitable growth scenario. One of the ways to address this K-shaped recovery, and which is again very much visible in any data that you look at, if you look at the CLEMS data, for example, which RBI publishes, post-COVID, there was this trend, and as Dhiraj also mentioned, this was a global phenomenon. It was also there in India, a little maybe more concentrated than anywhere else in the world because of a large agricultural sector. This trend of reverse migration. So we saw when these migrants left cities and went back to their villages where they belong, they once again got absorbed into the agricultural sector. They once again got absorbed into basic retail trading or wholesale trading. Sectors which are anyways inundated with a lot of overemployment and low productivity. So for the last few years, we have seen overall labor productivity, if you take all the Indian sectors together, to be shrinking compared to where we were prior to COVID. And this perhaps is what is also reflecting in your graph where you showed the household income growth rate is contracting vis-a-vis some of the other sectors that are there in the economy. And the basic reason in my mind is because of reverse migration, which led to decline in productivity of the Indian labor class. This needs to be readdressed. This needs to be, and the easiest way to address is, as I was mentioning, is job creation in the manufacturing space. Today, unfortunately, the Indian manufacturing continues to occupy about 17% or slightly lesser of the overall GDP, and it has been like this since ages. It's time to change that. We need to have a manufacturing sector which occupies as much or as high as at least 25%, which is the case in economies like Brazil, definitely in China, and some of these other peers which we consider as emerging economies today. And this is the only way where it can generate meaningful employment for semi-skilled workers, which we have in abundance in the country right now. We cannot solve the skilling problem overnight, but what we can solve is a significant boost in capex by MSMEs, which will generate a lot of manufacturing jobs, which will absorb a lot of these reverse migrated population which went away post-COVID. Because of expensive capital which was there till, you know, 3 months back, I think this process was not getting put into action. But now that RBI has taken steps to ease the capital flow, taken steps to reduce the cost of capital, this is going to encourage MSMEs to do that next round of capex, so that a lot of these reverse migrated labor would be absorbed in productive employment areas.
Let me ask you a counter on that, because you're talking about jobs, right? The fear of job losses has also amplified. If you look at it with AI coming in, a lot of people are thinking that I might lose my job, and that also might hold consumption. People do tend to hold more cash during a time when you have uncertainty. Add to that the uncertainty around trade, and you've got quite a pile up from the company side as well, who might not want to invest in capex if they're looking at a international market as well. So does that create a problem for consumption going forward as well?
So the fear of job losses due to AI is still a very evolving thought process. We really don't know how government policy is going to play a role in this, how efficient AI is going to be. These are questions which are yet to be answered. The immediate impact on jobs that we have seen so far from AI is obviously in the technology space. And technology space, the IT sector itself has been going through a lot of volatilities, which has led to generic shrinkages in hiring, as well as, outgo of people, along with AI. So obviously, centers or cities or urban centers which are dominated by employees who are engaged in the IT sector will face a backlash in terms of consumption. But it is yet to become a pan-India consumption deterrent, according to me. It's going to take another 2 to 3 years for this entire evolution of AI taking over jobs across all the sectors that are predominant in India actually plays out. But for now, the fear is very much there in IT, and that's the reason I have my reservations regarding cities like, say, for example, Bangalore or Hyderabad, or to a certain extent, Pune, where the economic activity is very much hinged upon employees who are engaged in the IT sector. So this is what I think regarding IT and AI.
Dheeraj, on the AI aspect, if IT loses job, others start also faring as well. Even it's come back onto the back of my mind as well. What happens? Should I buy that next car? Should I buy a house right now? Should I go for that big ticket foreign tour spending? Do you think those would hurt consumption as far as the Indian economy is concerned in FY26 or FY27? Or is that something that is more 2, 3, 4 years down the timeline?
Look, I agree with Debo Perman on the point that, artificial intelligence taking away jobs. The concerns are obviously lingering. They're there. And we've heard a lot of chatter about the global giants sort of beginning to downsize their process-led workforce where AI can more efficiently and more cost-effectively do the same task over the next years. So I think that the chatter is certainly growing. The fear is also certainly growing. But for it to be reflecting in hard numbers currently, it's a bit untenable. I believe that time is still some distance away from us for us to realize what really the impact of AI on job losses in India is. We also have to realize that currently we are in a bit of a cyclical slowdown, or at least the onset of it, as far as developed market demand, etc., is concerned, on which our service exports are really hinged. So it's really hard to disentangle if, the potential job losses that are on the cards are because of a cyclical slowdown in foreign growth, or is it because of AI? So with that difficulty in mind, I would also have a bit of a reservation saying that, AI would really be a constraint on India's consumption cycle, at least from the current perspective. Now, it is, of course, a structural challenge. And I would like to highlight that it feeds back into the same question you asked about K-shaped recovery. Now, we have seen technological developments drive India's growth over the past two decades, much more notably than ever before. In fact, if you look at global growth models across the world, which have been successful, there have been very few drivers in which those stories can be assimilated. It could be trade, debt, demographics, or technology. And India has benefited a lot from technological growth. And that's beyond doubt. So I hope that, the workforce is able to climb the technology and the skill ladder much more fastly for us to minimize, the losses because of AI, potential job losses in the future. And at the same time, to bridge this K gap that, we have seen occur in the economy in the post-pandemic world much more sharply. But of course, having said that, this remains on the risk radar, both for policymakers and as well as corporations. And I think that would play out to some extent on consumer psyche a few years down the line. But for now, I think it would be more of a cyclical slowdown in foreign demand, exports of services that would play out more on job losses and, workforce downsizing or, HR decisions and all of that.
Now, let me take you to another data point. I was looking at a new report that was released by Ministry of Statistics, which was the National Account Statistics for FY24. Now, of course, the data is a bit dated, but it shows you what India was consuming over in FY24 and what actually got a boost in consumption. Let me just go back to our charts and show you that part. If you look at it, how consumption trends are changing. So overall consumption was up 5.6% in FY24. Amongst which, look at restaurants and hotels, it's 18.1% increase. This was 68.7 earlier. Education is 10.4. Look at what has happened to health, 17.4%. Now, and alcohol, tobacco, and narcotics is 15.7% coming from a 1.6%. So there's a base effect there as well, but there's a lot of spending that's happening in areas which we did not see earlier. Devapa, moving to you, While consumption might be one story, the changing trends within consumption is another story. You had the household consumption expenditure survey also show that transport and health now account for major share rather than food there. So can you just decode that for us as to what's happening on that front? Because some of this expenditure cannot be sustained over a long period of time.
So this is the story of the share of wallet. Okay. So and any development theorist would point this out, that as an economy shifts or rises in its cycle, in its cycle of development, the consumption patterns generally shift from basic necessities more towards discretionaries. So if you compare the share of wallet that an Indian consumer, be it in the urban regions or in the rural regions, how they used to spend, say, a 1 rupee on various goods and services back in 2010, FY11 versus in FY23 or FY24, for which we have the latest data, you will see that there has been a distinct shift from the amount that used to be spent on food or housing or some of the basic necessities to more of the discretionary elements like eating out, like traveling, like tourism, like entertainment, and so on and so forth, like your beverage consumptions and so on. So there's nothing wrong in it. It's just a part of the development cycle. And it's in fact good news that Indian consumers are evolving with more of their consumptions now being in the discretionary segment, which are high margin, high value generating for any economy compared to low margin basic necessities like FMCGs and stuff. So, and this growth rate, I wish this growth rate sustains after we weed out the base effects, etc. Because as long as discretionaries grow at a fast pace, we will see an all-round environment of development led by consumption spending in the economy. So we are not an economy who earns their buck by, you know, exporting to external nations. We are an economy who earn their buck by selling goods and services to our own consumers. And if our own consumers are buying more for high margin, high value products rather than low margin basic necessities, means that obviously the overall economy is growing and overall economy is expanding, which is definitely a good news. And you will see this shift if you compare the XEES surveys over time for the last 10 years. And that's good news.
Dheeraj, over to you. What do you make of these trends, high spending on restaurants and hotels? Can it sustain? One, two, education and health, of course, can, transport also can. And how does that sit with the economy and how does that sit with the consumption cycle that we're looking at?
Look, Ishan, I understand your motivation. You know, if you look at this data across the world, the transition in India's case appears to be particularly accelerated. The share of services in consumer basket has dramatically increased, while the FY24 data that you showed could have an aberration of base effect in the post-pandemic surge in pent-up demand and so on and so forth, which lasted longer than we initially thought. I agree with Debopam that, you know, the share of services in India's consumers basket is rising, and the share of discretionary spending is also rising in conjunction. We have to realize the tailwind of technology and technological access has made it possible. And I think that trend is continuing to grow solidly. You know, the advent of cheap internet, e-commerce, food delivery apps. I think these are all mega trends that we have to reckon with. And to understand that, you know, it would mean a faster acceleration of consumers' basket, even for an emerging market like India, which probably is around $3,000 per capita income, much lower than where other economies were when this transition happened. So that thing being said, you know, we also have to ensure in such a case that with increased access to credit, with increased access to all of these avenues to express your demand for discretionaries and services, that it is being done in a disciplined way or in a balanceable way. For example, you know, when the Reserve Bank of India discovered that a lot of consumer loans were growing at a significant pace, were not actually for consumption, but were, you know, misallocated to other avenues or risky avenues such as investments into financial markets with without sufficient education, you know, these become issues of financial cycles and economic cycles that have to be deftly managed. So I think that while this is overall a very positive trend, it comes with its own benefits and disadvantages. We, as as economy watchers and policymakers, they will all have to be very careful about how to let these trends evolve in a disciplined and balanceable manner, like I said, and especially from a policymaking viewpoint, how to manage output cycles and financial cycles, which probably have become or they have acquired more amplitude now, you know, just because a lot of more people have access than they were probably before.
Dipupam, you touched upon this topic when we had started this conversation, the 60% mark. What needs to be done to achieve that from the government side at least?
Biggest intervention from the government is to address the K-shaped recovery. So today, and Ishan was also referring to it, there's this major significant split between the urban consumption and rural consumption. Urban consumption today account for 70% of the overall consumption pie, despite 30% of population who are located in urban regions. And the remaining, the balance 30% of the consumption pie comes from rural consumption, which houses 70% of the Indian population on an average. Now, this 70-30% is a very lopsided kind of an arrangement which needs to be significantly fixed. We need rural economic activity to be boosted at a much faster pace. Basic necessities in the form of good healthcare, good education facilities should be beefed up in rural regions so that there is money which is freed up from the overall share of wallets that we were discussing some time back of a rural consumer, so that the rural consumer need not spend significantly to get access to, you know, better quality healthcare in a private setup or a better quality healthcare. Better quality education at a private setup, while they can continue to rely on publicly offered services like them, and they can use that freed up capital to, you know, go ahead and buy that next two-wheeler or buy that next LCD TV or whatnot, and come up the curve in terms of consumption so that they are pretty much in sync with the amount of consumption which their urban counterparts are doing. Because a 70% population base consuming just 30% of the overall consumption of the country, that's very much not in sync and needs to be fixed. And this is how one can do it. The second is quality job creation in tier two regions, as well as in some of these rural urban places which are a confluence of rural and urban sentiments. The quality of jobs needs to be beefed up, and the best way to do it is with a lot of focus on MSMEs who tend to operate from these regions, enabling them to get access to a lot of capital. So for currently there are about 6 crores listed MSMEs on Udyam, out of which only I think about 2.5 crore MSMEs have access to bank credit. Now this situation needs to change, and needs to change very quickly, so that bank credit or any credit from any other source, be it NBFC, be it the private equity companies, etc., reach to these remaining 4 crore MSMEs, so that they can expand their operations, they can hire more people, and these hirings would typically be in the semi-rural or semi-urban regions, which would ensure that living standards there go up, and this gap in rural-urban consumption continues to get filled in. So this is what I think is going to take to bring overall consumption from a 56 to a 60%.
Dheeraj, if we were to go to 60%, what would it take from the government, from people, in order to reach that mark?
Look, I for one believe that it can very easily happen if we create the right environment. I agree with everything Dipupam said. Look, virtually paraphrasing most of it in a different way. As an economist, I understand income as a key driver of consumption. And if you can ensure that income growth remains in a sustained upward trajectory, inequities are addressed appropriately in a timely fashion, I think consumption growth still has a lot more potential in India's case. So 2 points. The one is, of course, from a very macro perspective, is that maintain macro stability. I think that's very important for consumers' confidence, optimism, and psyche, both in the near and the medium term. So we've done a tremendous job of, you know, upholding macro stability the last few years. Look, we've come a long way from where we were in the Fragile Five Club a decade ago. And I think all of it plays on consumer psyche as far as income growth expectations or inflation crisis expectations, exchange rate crisis expectations play out. So I think maintaining macro stability is very important from that perspective. The second bit, I believe, is that productivity growth interventions need to happen. Now, we've heard a lot of this debate over the last few quarters or a few years that which growth model should India choose? Is it manufacturing-led? Is it services-led? I think that for a population as large as ours, there is no choice virtually. I mean, we have to do interventions in all sectors. As far as agriculture is concerned, which employs half of your workforce and does not need too many people there, I mean, I think productivity enhancing interventions are absolutely necessary. And there is much less vision on the ground around these points than, let's say, there is about manufacturing and exports. I do agree that manufacturing share in GDP needs to rise from the paltry 15-16%, but I do not think it can go up to 25% of GDP. We do not have the global macro environment or trade environment that has supported that kind of transition for the other economies that have experienced that. So I think even achieving 20-22% of GDP will be a very healthy number as far as manufacturing or industrial growth is concerned from the overall GDP perspective. So you free up the labor from agriculture sector by providing more productivity growth enhancing interventions in the agriculture sector, absorb them into the industrial sector, even if it's at the low end of the manufacturing sector, and ensure that their upskilling is continued so that they can continue to move up the value chain. And as far as services sectors is concerned, which really has been the driver of growth the last few years, I believe that, you know, continued focus on health and education to ensure that human capital development remains on course is very, very essential. And sadly, again, you know, I do not see a great vision surrounding these two issues as far as the medium-term growth potential is concerned. I mean, if you look at India's growth breakdown on the last decade, you would find that about 40% of India's growth between 2010 and 2020 was driven by TFP growth. Now, it's very easy to, you know, break down TFP growth in your head, if not in numbers. It's technology, skills, and you know, things that improve productivity of us individuals. So I think having a very strong vision around health and education, especially higher education, research, development, these will be the very essential areas that will determine India's trajectory to that developed economy mark by whenever that happens, 2047 or later. But I think that vision has to be there.
Thank you, Dheeraj. Thanks, Devipam. While Devipam believes it's the case-shaped inequalities that need to be addressed, Dheeraj is asking for more of a vision from the government, at least as far as the macro stability and the future of productivity growth is concerned. Thank you, both of you, for coming on the show. It was great having you too, and we shall keep discussing this. We'll love to have you back again. Thank you. The Indian economy is going through a change as it tries to maintain the over 6% growth and achieve the 2047 goal of Viksit Bharat. Consumption is expected to be a key driver there, with domestic demand helping an economy in a global environment that's uncertain. Can India do it? Can it reach that 60% mark? And what are the measures to do that? Addressing inequality in terms of the K-shaped recovery that happened post-pandemic is one of them. But there needs to be much more in terms of lifting income, in terms of providing for income across rural and urban areas, bridging those gaps, and also in terms of addressing the labor productivity problem that has cropped up again and again. Will India get stuck again, or will it rise to the occasion? Thank you. We'll be back next week with more news and analysis on our weekly show. Thanks.